Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. I am a huge believer in feeling your feelings in your past and present to live a rich and true life. I was thrilled to read the book by today's guest, Jeff Brown, the author of Soul Shaping, A Journey of Self-Creation. Soul Shaping is the true story of a criminal lawyer called to a more heartfelt path. Soul Shaping is every person's journey from self-alienation to soul satisfaction in the heart of modern life. That journey is all about the inner world, the inner wild, the inner break for freedom from the shackles of shame, fear, and misidentification. Soul Shaping is a no-nonsense inner travelogue that inspires us to do the real work of excavating and honoring who we really are before our opportunity passes. It is a call to question the misguided self-concepts that are fed to us by the outer world and to faithfully begin our own private revolution, a revolution of the spirit. Jeff, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Happy to be here.
I'm so glad to have you on It's Your Health. You know, Jeff, I loved your book, and people who seek and speak their truth are so inspiring. And in the preface of Soul Shaping, you write about being riddled with shame and self-doubt during the time you were writing the book. Can you tell us about this time and what you were feeling?
Yeah, you know, one of my kind of core unresolved and perhaps not completely resolvable issues is I kind of associate exposure with attack. And, you know, as I was writing the book and knew that I was about to release a book out into the world that was so deeply self-revealing, a lot of those different feelings came up. And one of those voices really has a belittling quality to it. You know, I've traditionally have gone through waves in my life where I've either really kind of walked into my power and then at other times been pulled back by this kind of shame voice, hiding my light under a bushel of shame. And as I was writing the book, I would hear from that voice, and it would say things like, you know, who wants to read your bloody diary? You know, because the book's so personal and subjective, and, you know, really nobody's going to read this book. This is of no interest to anyone. This is just a narcissistically intended book. And, you know, I went through all of that, and I learned over the course of the process, as I have through my life, to try to walk into a more positive way of looking at my reality and my activities while also holding the space for that voice.
Yeah, well, you know, you had a really tough childhood. I mean, I was heartbroken reading about it, and I can see where you would have that shame and those voices. If you can tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
Yeah, I grew up in a real, my Jewish mother married an Irish man, and he converted to Judaism, and he brought forward a lot of the kind of depressive cycles and structures of his family experience, and she brought forth a lot of the anxiety around money, sort of poverty consciousness experiences growing up in a Jewish home in Canada in the 40s and 50s with no money. And they just really, his stuff really ignited her stuff. And so the house itself became a battlefield. And because my father was fundamentally depressed, my mother needed somewhere to move her energy, and I became her scapegoat. And, you know, we basically spent the first 18 years of my life going toe-to-toe on the battlefield that was our home. And additionally, because of the economic circumstances, we moved, I don't know, I think it was 15 or 16 different houses.
Wow.
We lived in before I was 18. And, you know, apart from the stabilizing effect of my grandparents and my own, for whatever reason, innate knowing that moving my emotions as they came was the only way that would keep me from being insane, you know, I don't think that I would have been able to achieve a whole lot in my life. Yeah. So, I mean, there were some good things around me, but primarily it just was a war zone.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about that war zone, and the way that you survive is, you know, you write, quote, we often identify ourselves as the adaptations and disguises that have helped us to stay alive.
That's
and
right.
And I thought that was just incredible. I mean, that you hit the nail on the head.
I think we're all doing that in life. I mean, that's, you know, we're walking through the, for whatever reason, I had a witness observer at an early age that would witness my manifestation, my personality, my ways of being, and would ask me if that was really who I was or if that was just how I was surviving. I mean, I really got that there was a difference sometimes between our essential self and our manifest self, and my work in my lifetime was to bring those two together.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the work that you did was bioenergetic therapy, which I'm a huge fan of. I did it for 3 years, and it changed my life. I didn't even know I was angry. Like, I didn't know how to get angry.
Yeah.
I would just get sad. And, boy, I had a pretty nutty childhood myself, and I had a lot to be angry about. And getting in touch with that and releasing it and hitting and yelling and kicking and getting to what I really knew about myself and the strength that I had. And if you can, for people who aren't familiar, if you can talk a little bit about bioenergetics and how it was for you.
Well, bio is a body-centered psychotherapy that was created, you know, it was really a Reichian model, but it was created by Alexander Lowen and John Perakos many years ago. And really, you know, it is a psychoanalytic therapy, but it's body-centered. They really believe that all the sort of holdings in the mind, all the monkey mind behaviors, all those anxieties emanate from a blocked or held emotional body. So they bring you back into the places in your emotional body where you held feelings, what I call the power of then in the book. You know, you go back down the path and reclaim those feelings. And by excavating those emotions, energizing your system, and moving those feelings out, you create an opportunity to come back into your body and back into the moment. You know, Lowen really understood that if you're not in your body, you're not here. And I believe that as well. And, of course, many New Age spiritualists are doing everything in their power to pull us out of our body and detach mm-hmm. us from our emotional body, as though our emotional body are misidentifications. And what Lowen helped me to really understand was that it was very much the opposite, that the grist for the soul mill, the karmic field of expansion, really is that emotional material. That is how you grow in your spirituality. And so I did a number of sessions with him, and I was in the bioenergetic training program for 3 years. And apart from the healing that happened for me, the moving of deep, deep stuff that I could never get to, you know, it's yes. like I went over his breathing stool. He pushed me like a mad warrior into the deep breath that I was, and in opening those lungs and the feelings that were held there. Until you get into a physical structure that you're not used to that brings up what you're holding, like you said, you often don't know what you're holding. You don't know how much mm-hmm. anger you're holding. You think people are crazy who are enraged. You think that you think you've forgiven everything from your past until you wake that body up and find out there's a whole lot more that has to be moved.
Yeah, and did you ever have that experience where if you were over the breathing stool, it felt like you were being choked, like when your chest yeah. would just tighten because you couldn't get – it was just so painful. But once you got there, well, I mean, I cried like I've never cried before.
Well, yeah, because, you know, one time I went over – I was in his little old dusty old office in his house in Connecticut, and I remember going over the breathing stool, and I was like all this nausea. It was just nothing but nausea, which, of course, was the step before the crying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like I couldn't believe how much stuff was held in this container. And, my, of course, I had a hard time breathing into my chest because unknowingly, at least consciously unknowingly, I had been completely tightening up that area. You know, shallow breath, shallow life. The less you breathe, the less you have to feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was an early mechanism for me. And I remember afterwards, he kept pushing me. You know, he pushed, pushed, pushed. And then I left the session, and I had new eyes. You know, it was like that experience of feeling like I was now here in a way that I never had been before.
Yeah, you know, another thing you write about that, again, kind of tapping into that new eyes, is you write about your first taste of unity consciousness on a trip to Turkey. And if you can tell us, what is unity consciousness, and how was it that in that unfamiliar landscape you were able to, you know, get in touch with it?
Yeah, I flew to Turkey after my second year of law school. Oh, no, after my third year, before I was called to the bar, I think. I got in Turkey, and Turkish Air lost my baggage, my luggage, and we arrived on the coast, and I had no clothes. And I was young, and I didn't realize how attached I was to my clothes. No one really spoke English. And so now I didn't have my familiar shrouds, you know, mm-hmm. the things that covered me over. And I felt a strong temptation, like the little boy part of me wanted to just go home. And I have this part of me that I call Little Missy in the book and in my life that was kind of like my inner daemon that was pulling me in the direction of true paths. And, you know, Little Missy and I dialogued, and she said, this is an opportunity to have an adventure. Well, it turned out to be an adventure in soul shaping. I didn't have words for it yet. And so I surrendered. I think the act of surrendering to this experience and trusting it was what did it. And by the time I arrived in this little village of Kosh, I remember arriving in that village, and it's just like I had a taste of essence. It was like that feeling you have when you do deep emotional work or spend 2 months on a meditation cushion where everything seemed unified. This idea of all one wasn't a concept anymore. I really got it. It was like I was pulled out of my localized lens and saw everything through a vaster perspective. And really after that, the many years since then, my work has been to try to weave together the quest for essence fundamental to the East, like the quest for the unity experience, with the quest for emotional health and healthy self-concept fundamental to the West, into a model I call ascending with both feet on the ground. And it really started in Turkey. It wasn't enough for me just to have a unity experience. I also had to find a way in my work, and it's probably why the book took so long to write, to also weave together the emotional body and my personal identifications as part of my spirituality. And that's what soul shaping is.
Yeah, you know, you just mentioned Little Missy, and you also talk about the warrior. That was another voice and another, you know, side of yourself. Can you tell us about the warrior and a little more about Little Missy and how they kind of had some conflicts?
Yeah, well, I identified myself as a warrior. I mean, it was like I had adaptations in disguise as Bad Boy, Encyclopedia Brown, Huckster, like was my sales face that I would put on. The warrior fit was more true to who I was. I knew that I was going to be a criminal trial lawyer. I saw a famous criminal trial lawyer in Canada on TV when I was young, and I'd say, I know that guy, Eddie Greenspan. I'm going to work with him. And I ultimately did work with him. And really, I was really a warrior soul coming into this life, and it took time for me to realize that really my work in this life, the nature of my soul-shaping journey, is to become a more surrendered or benevolent warrior, a tenderling warrior. And so Little Missy is like this inner daemon that it's like came in holding the truth of my path below my adaptations and disguises. And so Little Missy started to interface with the warrior when I was in law school, actually in undergrad. It started with me writing on the sidebar of the paper while I was taking class notes, "You are not who you appear to be. You are not who you appear to be." And really that was Little Missy, you know. And then by the time I was about to sign on the dotted line and start a law practice, right after being called to the bar, she got really activated and began to have discussions and debates with the warrior self I identified myself as in an effort to try to pull me out of that decision, knowing that if I made that decision, my growth would stop.
I see. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. Like when I saw the cover, it's beautiful, and the title, Soul Shaping. I mean, how do you really define the soul?
Well, I don't have words for it. You know, I think it's such a personal or primal experience. You know, I mean, I've really begun to understand a little bit after that time period that really this journey was about, there was some kind of a growth thing. It was like I came in with scriptures, particular callings, lessons, key relational experiences that I was here to go through and to learn from. And that in so doing, if I saw them all the way through to their lessons, somehow my spiritual or soulular consciousness expanded. You don't have to get too airy-fairy about it. It can just be that you experience yourself in a more expanded way,
like a more mature way.
Just call it maturation on a deep level. I mean, it doesn't have to be any more than that.
No, I like that. You know, I lived in Santa Cruz for years, which I love, but it's very airy-fairy, hippie. And honestly, in the New Age, it's funny because people always say, oh, you must be like that. It's like, I am in a deeper way, like we talked about prior to the interview and we talked about, you know, now about really if you get in touch with your emotions and you really deal with your pain, then I think it's great. But if you're just above it all and you do what you mentioned as a spiritual bypass, then I'm not into it. And that's what I saw a lot of, and it turned me off.
Tons of it. Well, part of it is the vibration out there supports that. I mean, a lot of people within serious pain go out there because it allows them somehow energetically to support it in pulling out of their bodies. And if you go out there with the intention to stay solid and grounded, it's a fantastic counterbalance, but it's real easy to float away like on a pogo stick to the stars out there and completely forget. You know, I mean, that's what ungrounded spirituality is. You're like a one-winged bird. You're flying really high, and then eventually you can't sustain and you come crashing down to earth. Your relationship falls apart, and they take over your apartment because you forgot to pay your rent. I've seen a lot of that in that West Coast mentality. But the beauty of the West Coast is, unlike the overly grounded, almost buried East Coast, they are at least questing for something more expanded than the localized monkey mind.
That is true. Yeah, I mean, I love living in Santa Cruz, and I miss it. I do miss it terribly. And, you know, you also write something interesting that we must sell our soul, C-E-L-L. What does that mean?
The idea that the emotional body is the karmic field where the soul's lessons are harvested. I say repressed emotions are unactualized spiritual lessons. So it's simply the idea that the way that we grow in our spirituality is through doing a deep working through of our emotional material, like the kind of work that Outlaw is encouraging in bioenergetics. That, in fact, you can't grow spiritually independent of those. There's so much emphasis in the New Age movement on getting out of identification and out of emotions as though your spirituality lives outside of your body. So my view is that your spirituality lives right in the heart of your body, and that unless you work that material through that you're wanting to avoid, you're never going to grow.
You are so fabulous. You know, I think for years I was kind of turned off to spirituality. Like, I kind of associate it with the other stuff, and I thought, I'm not a spiritual person. I mean, I'm culturally Jewish, and I'm into that, and I really like celebrating holidays and stuff. But I didn't really feel that spiritual. But after talking to you, it's like, oh, I have been soul-shaping. This is really cool.
Yeah. It's a weave. I call it Western consciousness. You blend the wisdom of the West and the East, and that's the spirituality we can sink our teeth into.
Yeah, that really is. Now, in the back of the book, you have this great glossary of all the terms, because there's a lot of terms. There's a soul pod, and there's, you know, I mean, there's just so many things. What is a soul pod, by the way?
Soul pod are really, you know, that person or group of people whom your soul finds the most resonance with at any given moment. It can be your birth family at first, because that's where your growth is happening. You know, you pick them, or they were picked for you for some expansion-related purpose. And but then it changes, you know, and I think I always encourage people on the path to understand that friends and family may fall away as you grow and your resonance changes, and then you allow yourself, you invite yourself in the direction of the next soul pod of individuals that you're going to be able to grow with and grow through over time.
Yeah. Now, for people listening, I'm sure they're going to be inspired and say, hey, you know, I want to learn more about this. I want to do some deep work. What are some first steps, just some gentle steps they can take towards the direction of soul shaping?
Well, I always encourage people to begin by creating space for their inner voice in their lives. I mean, just go to nature or go anywhere, half a day a week, something, pull out of your daily adapted reality to try to have a taste of who lives inside of you. And I think therapy is a very important part of the process. I encourage people to find a grounded, like a bioenergetics therapist, or someone like Terry Hunt, who I know works out in Boston, New York area, and really, really take the therapeutic process seriously. I mean, if you can do the work yourself, it's fantastic, but I've never found that I was able to do it all myself. I had too many patterns. Habitual range of emotion was too tight. I needed support. And so I encourage that as well. And I also encourage people to go to places like Omega, for example, on the East Coast, or Esalen on the West Coast, and do workshops that call out to them. Because if they call out to them, there's usually something essential they have to learn there.
Well, Jeff, this has been so fantastic. And how can people learn more about you and your awesome work?
Soulshaping.com, the site's active. It's going to be changed in mid-July and become much more interactive, but that's the best place to look. The book's available, can be ordered through any bookstore. Random House distributes it if they don't have it in the store, and Amazon as well.
Now, are you practicing bioenergetics now? I mean, are you help? Are you a okay?
I got no time. I'm starting in mid-August. I'm going to start doing more one-on-one soul shaping work.
Oh,
I'll incorporate bioenergetics into workshops and so on, but there'll be a whole lot more to it.
Oh, I look forward to going to one of those someday. That sounds terrific.
Thanks.
Well, if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great week. Keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.